Okay, we're going to start here on the Lamed Hayyam and Aleph by the two dots. Seal the Dover Acher. This is talking about the conversation that took place between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yoshua in the Mishnah. And Rabbi Yishmael was trying to find out what was the reason for the Gzeira by the Gvinot Akum. And Rabbi Yeshua did not want to disclose it to him. And then at the end of the Mishnah, on Choftet, on Bet, it says that Rabbi Yeshua sealed the Dover Acher. He pulled him off onto some other topic, and he asked him the question from the Psukim in Shira Shirim. So the Gemara wants to know now, what does it mean? My kitovim dodecha miyayin. What's the parish of the pasuk of kitovim dodecha miyayin? In the Mishnah, it asks whether it was kitovim dodayich or dodecha. And over here, that we explain that it is kitovim dodecha miyayin. So what is that referring to? Ki atar avdimi amar amra kineset yisrael fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Bnei Israel are speaking here, and they're speaking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shalom, arevim alai divrei dodecha yoter miyena shel Torah. They're more beloved to me are the words of the Chachamim over here, that is the Tovim Dodecha, Miyayin, Yayin is Yenu Shel Torah, Ikra Shel Torah. So Rashi over here claims that it's talking about or speaking about the Divrei Sofrim, which is the Divrei Durabonon, are more beloved to us, or more precious to us than Divrei Torah, which would be referring to Ikra Shel Torah Bishrib Ichtav. So it could mean here, Midurabonon, mean literally Isirim Durabonon, or Dinei Dirabonon are more precious than the Dinei Doraita that are in Torah Shebichtav, or it could mean that Divrei Torah Shebaal Peh that are passed down by the Chachamim and shaped by the Chachamim are more precious than the words of Torah Shebichtav. Now the Gemara continues, Maishnai Haikra Deshaili, why did he pick this Pasuk to ask him about? Was he making some veiled reference to this Pasuk? So Rabbi Shimon Pazi vitim Rabbi Shimon Barami Ireshi Dekra. He was hinting to him something from the beginning of the pasuk, which says Kamalei Ishakeni Mishakot Piu. So Amarlei Ishmal Achi Chashuk Sviftotecha. Close or seal your lips. Zubazu. One to the another. Ve'alti Ve'al Ashiv. Don't be so quick to answer. My time. What's the reason he's telling him to be silent? Why is he telling him he's not really open or willing to disclose to him the reason that they were Oser Chalavakum? So Amar Ula Vitem Rabbi Shmuel Bar Abba Gzeira Chadashahi. It was a brand new Gzeira. We don't ask questions about it. We don't delve into it. We don't cast aspersions on any new Gzeira. My Gzeirta. What is this? What is the Gzeira for? In that, okay, we understand now it's a new Gzeira. And basically, as Rashi points out here, that when you had a new Gzeira, they waited a year. We're going to see this a second in the Gemara. Ula says it in the Gemara, that we wait a year until we disclose the reason for the Gzeira. So Gemara says, okay, what's the Gzeira itself for? Amar Shimon Pazi, Amar Shimon Ben Levi, Mishum Nikur. It's a problem of Giloy. We worry about a snake depositing its venom in the milk. Velei Malei Mishum Nikur. Why doesn't he just answer him and tell him that's the reason? Kedula, Damarula, Kigazi, Gzerita, Bimarova, whenever they put a Gzera, new Gzera, Chachamim in place in Eretz Yisrael, Lo Migalu Taimad, Treso Yachishata. They would not disclose the reason for the Gzera until 12 months had elapsed. Why is that? Dilma Ikanish, Dilo Sphirle. Maybe there's some people who don't, it doesn't resonate with them, the reason. Vati Lazuzale Ban, they'll come to Mizalze. So what the Chachamim wanted to do is, up front, they wanted everybody to accept the Gzera and have it be widely accepted and dispersed through the Am. So they didn't say the reason, they just said it, and people assumed that the Chachamim know what they're talking about, that they're doing the right thing, and therefore they accepted the Gzeret Chachamim. After it was already well accepted, then they disclosed the reason. So then if there were objections, or people were speaking about it, or questioning the reason behind it, at that point in time it was okay, because the Gzeret was already well accepted, and they wouldn't get reversed. The problem is that if up front they disclosed the reason, then people would start questioning it, or possibly dismissing such a Gzerah, and then it would never get widely accepted because there were dissenters to the Gzerah. So the Gemara says, Megadi for Rav Yirmiya. Rav Yirmiya said, what are you talking about? That can't be the reason. El Miato Yivesha Tishtare, that dried out cheese, meaning hard and dried out cheese, then that should be okay. Yashan, also fermented or old cheese, meaning well aged cheese, Tishtare. Now, whether Yashan here is talking about the cheese itself, which seems to be from Tosis what it's speaking about, versus whether it's Rashi thinks it's still talking about the Yayin and the Sheikhar, it's talking about wine and beer, that they should be Mutar. And that's because we saw earlier in the Gemara, when it came to wine and to beer, that the venom of the snake does not allow it to have shelf life, does not allow it to ferment properly, and does not allow it to age properly. So the venom will prevent that from happening. So the same is true by cheeses. By cheeses, it won't allow it to dry out and to become hardened cheese. And And also Yashan, it would not have become aged cheese. Rabbi Yotosis says, how come the Gemara doesn't ask like it did before? Well, let's say Gzeira Atu, Mechadosh Atu Yashan. Let's say we have a Gzeira, okay, Chasadash is problematic, therefore we'll have to ask our Yashan also. So here Yotosis says that it might be that the telling between aged cheese and newer cheese is very easy. It's something that anybody could do. Whereas with wine, it's a little more, you need a discerning palate or more a discerning nose to know whether it's really aged or not. So Yotosis over there, maybe the Gemara thought there was a possibility of doing such a gzeira. Over here, they didn't even have a havamina because they're so different. But whether you're saying talking about the cheese or not, the venom will prevent it from having a long duration, a long shelf life, and it will prevent it from hardening. And therefore, we can not worry about the venom. The fact is that they never made such a distinction in Gvinot. They didn't make such a distinction in Gvinot. That cannot be the reason that it's asur. And to Amar, Rabbi Chanina, Yavesh Mutar, Emeni Chol Yavesh. If it's dried out or hardened cheese, it's mutar, because the venom will not allow it to reach that state. Yashan mutar, again. If it becomes, it ages, whether it's talking about tosas going to the cheese or going to Rashi, it's talking about the wine and the beer, Emeni Chol Yashan doesn't allow it to age, because the venom prevents it from aging or having good shelf life. So now, Amar Rabbi Chanina, so what is the reason? There's no possibility, when cheese hardens, there's no possibility that the cheese will harden and not have some residual milk or residual liquid in the cheese. Now Rashi says the problem with this is that when it comes to milk, we know that kosher milk can curdle into cheese. Non-kosher milk cannot curdle into cheese. So because of that, if he puts in non-kosher milk, if it's a mixture of kosher and non-kosher milk, well, no, it won't work. The kosher milk will curdle, the non-kosher milk will not curdle. So that's how you always know the difference. That you'll know if it's kosher milk or not kosher milk is based on the fact of whether it curdles or doesn't curdle. So the Gemara here, or according to Rashi, says the problem is that even when you curdle it, and say it's a mixture of kosher and non-kosher milk, even if it was only kosher milk, and it curdled into cheese, the cheese in the holes, or inside of the cheese, on the top of the cheese, there's still some liquid left. I mean, not everything hardens. There is a part of the liquid that's left. Now, that liquid could either be from the kosher milk that didn't curdle, or it also could be because there was non-kosher milk in there that did not curdle. And since we can't distinguish, that's the problem over here. That's the way Rashi reads it. Tosafot says that's not the problem. That can't be, because that's later on. That's an issue later on when we discuss, when we're talking about milk, that's a problem with the mixture of the kosher and non-kosher milk. But over here, where the non-Jew knows you're going to use it for cheese, he's not silly enough to put in non-kosher milk. He knows you'll figure it out. He knows that it doesn't curdle, so it doesn't make any sense. So over here, Tosafot says the problem is that the venom, you will not be able to know whether the venom is there or not causing it to age or not, or giving it problems in terms of aging or hardening, because there's always liquid that is left over. There's always a portion of the cheese that does not harden, or is a portion of the milk that doesn't harden or curdle into the cheese, and that liquid's left over in the crack. So because of that, there's a liquid. That liquid substance, we don't know if that's the venom or if that's the milk that's left over. So therefore, you could have the cheese, but the venom would not curdle, but it would still be there. Or the portions that don't curdle are that liquid that's left over afterwards. So you can't make such a clear distinction. And therefore, that's the problem over here. Sheyev shalom b'lo tzikzei chalav is a continuation of what we said above. So one of Tosafot's proof is that the original statement is Amar Chanina, and then here we have Amar Chanina again. If Rabbi Chanina was changing his mind from the previous statement, then it should be Ella Amar Chanina. The fact that it doesn't say Ella sounds like Rabbi Chanina is continuing with that same thought process. It's a venom problem. It's a venom problem in the sense that it doesn't. That we can't be clear about this because of the leftover liquid which could contain the venom. Shmuel Amar Mishom Mipnei Shemadim Noto Be'or Kebat Nevela. So over here, the problem is that they curdle it, or when they put the cheese and curdle the cheese, they place it inside of the skin of a kebat nevela, inside the skin of the nevela. Now, before we discussed what the problem was the perish. That they used the perish itself, they used whatever was in the stomach to cause the curling of the cheese, threw in the milk to the cheese, and that was the problem. Now, we're saying, no, it's not the perish in there, but it's rather the kebat itself is what's causing the curling. Gemara says, ha keba gufa sharia. So it sounds from the day that only the skin around is a problematic, but the keba itself, the stomach itself, would be totally fine. Did Shmuel really say that the stomach's totally fine? Vatanan, kebat hovid kochovim, bishon nevelarizu asura. Comes to a stomach of a avodu kochovim, an animal of an ovid kochovim, or an animal that's a nevela, asura. Ravina ba ato dobi kochovim lav nevelahi. isn't a behema of an obey kochavim automatically a nevela? So what's the difference between a behema of an obey kochavim and a behema of nevela? So Amar Shmuel Chadik Tani. Shmuel says no, that it's really not two different things. It's actually the same thing. Keba shchitat ovdei kochavim. The keba of a shchita of an obey kochavim is nevela. That is a nevela, and that's a surah. So that's the case. Shmuel says that not only is the or problematic, he says the keba itself, the stomach itself, is problematic. Where it says lo kasher kan kodim chazara kan achar chazara. It depends on when. This is the original Mishnah, or the original statement or position of Rabbi Yeshua, was that it's a problem. The keba was a problem. The stomach itself, or what's contained in the stomach, is not perish, and therefore it's problematic. After Rabbi Yishmael challenged him from the kebat ola, after he changed him that, then he was later on, he was chozer. He retracted his position, and he said, I'm wrong about this, and the keba is okay. Now, Mishnah lo zozamim koma, as the Gemara says, Mishnah, the original Mishnah that he taught, stayed in place, that there was a problem of the keba, and that's what Shmuel's referencing to when he says it's asur. When he says it's mutar, when the keba is mutar, and only the or is problematic, that's already after the chazara, after Rabbi Yeshua had retracted his position. At that point in time, it was only the or, when it was the skin around it, that was problematic. But the keba itself, what's contained in the keba, or the stomach itself, that causes the curdling, that's not a problem, and that we have a proof from Ola. Now we're going to have a series of other Amoraim, we're going to offer alternatives to what the Isser of Givinat HaKum was. Rav Malki, Mishmeid, Rav Adar, Rav Abba, Mar Mipnei Shemachlikin, Paneh, Bushuman, Chazir. They used to baste the cheese with pig fat on top, and that's what caused the problem. Because he says they used to curdle it, they needed some agent that causes the curdling, and the agent they used was vinegar. That vinegar could come from non-kosher wine or a problem of stam yenam or yain nesech, and therefore that's the problem with the cheese. The cheese has a mamid that's not could possibly not be kosher, or could be a problem that has another gzera involved with it. Problem is that they actually use the sap of fruit that is orla. Now orla applies to a non-Jew as well, meaning that when it comes to orla, we know that orla applies both in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. I mean, it applies in Eretz Yisrael in a Torah, and in Chutz La'aretz in Halacha L'Moshe Misinai that orla applies. Now there is a difference that orla inside of Eretz Yisrael applies, and the safek is a safek d'oraisa, and we have to be the chumrah. But when it comes to orla in Chutz La'aretz, orla applies in Chutz La'aretz, but if it's a safek orla in Chutz La'aretz, then we're make it, we go to kula. And that's why, in general, nobody's worries about when you go to buy fruits or vegetables in the store, nobody asks whether it's in the first 3 years or not, even though there's orla in Chutz La'aretz. That's because we're talking about safek orla. Once you reach safek orla, we go to kula at that point in time. If someone was to know for certain that it was orla in Chutz La'aretz, then it would be problematic. So those are the different reasons now that we've seen for the possibility of why the cheese was asur. Gemara says, come on, who is it like that this is a problem, that the sap of the fruit is problematic? Ki haitano, it's like this kana, that's non. Belazer mer, amamid b'sraf orla, asur. Someone who uses the sap of orla, it's asur, mibnei shiperi, because that's a fruit. Gemara says, sefilatim, Rabbi Yeshua, his baal plukt over there is Rabbi Yeshua. Even Rabbi Yeshua will agree in this case. Akan lo pligi Rabbi Yeshua, leid Rabbi Elazar, lebekatfa, the guza. When we're talking about the sap of the geza, of the trunk or of the tree itself. You talk about the sap of the tree, that's problematic. When you come to the sap of the fruits, mold it. Over there you would agree that it's a sur. For sure it's willing to be matir when it comes to sap, but that's sap of the tree. But here we're talking about the sap of the fruit. Sap of the fruit, maybe he's motive. Behind the time, that's the Mishnah that we have. That you're allowed to use the sap from the leaves and the sap from the branches or the roots, mutar, over there that you're allowed to use, b'srafa pagim, but the sap that comes out, or the fruit juice that comes out of the pagim, or the unripened fruits, asur, that is problematic, minyoshu peri, because that's a fruit. So now you see that Rabbi Yeshua does agree to that position, Rabbi Elazar, when it comes to fruits. Ben Rav Chista, Ben Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So now, whether you add this, the Girsat Abach is whether you have this Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, or it's just Rav Nachman by himself. Either, according to both of these pshatim, that we say the problem is either it's chometz, which could come from Yai Nesach or Stam Yenam, or we say it's Sraf or Orla. We're talking about Orla over here. Now Orla is also Osir. Both of those items are Osir Bachila and Osir Behana'a. If that's the case, then the cheese should not only be Osir Bachila, the cheese should also be Osir Behana'a. That's what the Gemara asks over here. Based on their two positions, that's the reason for the Isir by the cheese, that it has to be because either of Chometz or because of the Pre or La, then Ben Rav Chista, Ben Rav Nachman, Titaser, Be'ano, should be Osir Ba'ano. The Gemara leaves that as a kasha. That's problematic. You're right. According to them, it really should be Osir Ba'ano, and their reasoning would not fit. Now, Tosfos goes back, and based on this, we come up with a couple of conclusions that are very important over here. Number one is that when it comes to Gvinat Akum over here, what's the reason that Gvinat Akum is really Asur? So you have the Amoraim who lay out a number of reasons. One is Nikor, the problem of Giloy. Number two, we saw was the possibility that it's a problem of Karush, that we worry about it, that it curdled the cheese, and there'll be, either according to Rashi, non-kosher cheese mixed in there, or the curdling of the cheese will leave the venom inside of it. So that'll be the next possibility. Or they use it because it's Mamidin Otoba or Kebat Nevela, that they use it in the ore, in the skin itself of the Kebat, which would be problematic. Although we know from the Kebat itself, or the perish of the Kebat, that would be perfectly fine. And then we have other reasons that were offered over here in our daf, which is either because of they put the Shuman Chazir on top of it, or they use Chometz, or they use Peri Orla. Now the last two of Peri Orla and the Chometz were rejected by the Gemara, because then they should have been Osir Banna as well. So those two seem to fall by the side. We know today that they don't put Shuman Chazir over the cheese, so that falls away as well. And Tosfos, who thinks that the whole problem here, or the whole reasoning of Erev Shmuel, we said, Alacha, who you left with? You left Shmuel now, Shmuel's reason, and you left with Rabbi Chanina, according to Tosfos, was the same as the reasoning of Rabbi Shua ben Levi, which is that it's a problem because of Nikor, or you say, according to Rashi, it's separate. Nevertheless, the Tosa says, when it comes to a Pasak Alocha, when you have Rabbi Shua ben Levi versus Shmuel, the Alocha is like Rabbi Shua ben Levi. So the only thing that can be a problem over here is the problem of Nikor, of Giloy. And Tosa says, today we're not Choshesh v'Giloy, we don't have snakes among us. So if you go through all those reasons, then the Gvina, or the Isser of Gvina, should not apply to us anymore. Gvina Takum should not be a problem at all. We know only kosher milks are what curdle into cheese, so totally fine. Number two is, we don't have all the other reasons either fall away, or when you come to a steer between Rabbi Shua ben Levi and Shmuel, we're going to pass them like Rabbi Shua ben Levi. So all we're left with is Nikor. And Tosa says, don't say to me, they made the Gzeira, and now we're trying to undermine the Gzeira. He says, but the Chamim only made the Gzeira where there are snakes involved. When there are no snakes there, there's no din of Giloy at all. So now Tosas in the end says, okay, I think we can eat those cheeses. And he says that he brings Rayot to that fact that there were those that ate cheeses because they didn't worry about it. There are many places that eat cheese. They use flowers for the amada. In their location, their locale, they allowed it because they use flowers to cause the curdling of the cheese. So they, even if you don't accept my reasoning that Shmuel doesn't apply here and Shmuel does apply here, then maybe it's not a problem in places where they do it with flowers. It says, Meu bim komenu, in our places, Shemabidim bekeba, they actually put it in the stomachs. Omer Rav, Rav Yehuda ben Rav Rav Chaim, Sheish tam ktsat le'asur. Over here, there's a reason to oser. Even though we don't hold like Shmuel, there's still a reason to oser. Mipnei shemochina keba. They salt the stomach, be'ora, with the skin still on it. Then you have a problem, basar b'cholav, the meliach, are you a roteach? Because meliach, when you salt it in, it becomes like a roteach, as a din, right? The rabbanon, that melicha makes it like a din of roteach, like it's hot. If that's the case, then it's going to accept, or it's going to have the or a keba, is going to leach, that flavor will leach into the cheese itself, and then you have a problem of basar b'cholav, you have a problem of nevelo. That they use pig stomachs or nevela and meliach and they salt it, so that would also be a problem. So Tosfos in the end only wants to ask the gvinot because they use these stomachs, but they salt it, and that's what causes the problem. Without the salting, had they simply been mamid it, or they use something else to causing the curdling of the cheese, like flowers where you mix it other places, there they would have been mutar, or they allowed it to be eaten the gvinat takum. So in their locales or where they were, where they used non-kosher animals and they salted them, there they were thought that the Isur should persist because of the problem of the salting. Had they not salted it, it actually sounds like they would have been willing to be matir those types of cheeses. Tosfos also points out something interesting here with regards to milk. How come the Gemara here is worried about Nikor, about Giloy by milk, and yet by other drinks, they don't worry about it, like by Dvash and other things that we drink, that the Gemara never makes a big deal about the fact that Mayim and Dvash about Giloy. How come here they make such a big deal about Giloy by milk, and they made a whole Gzeira about it? So Tosfos says that it might be by milk, that there's something unique about milk that is different than Mayim and Dvash. And Tosfos says that milk is unique, that other items in general, even though we're not makpid on Giloy, people are makpid on Nikiyut, because those items are drunk. They're, actually, people drink them, and they want them to be clean. But then, since milk is not always
used for drinking, but actually for curdling a cheese and other things afterwards, they aren't as makpid on the nikiut of it, and therefore there's a more likelihood that even though they're not makpid on giloy on these other items, but they are makpid on nikiut by milk, they're not even makpid on nikiut. Because of that, the chazal or gemara had a bigger chashash with regards to giloy when it came to milk. Right now, the gemara continues. Darash of Nachman Breid Rav Chista. My dichtiv, what does it say? This is back to the pasuk from Shir Shirim. The Reach Shmanecha Tovim. What does it mean that the smell of the shemen is so good? Lema Talmud Chacham Dome. A Talmud Chacham, what does he compare to? The Tzolchit Shem Plaitin. He's like a perfume bottle, a perfume full of migule. When it's open, Reicha Nodif. Then its smell permeates the whole area and everything around it. Mechusef, it's covered up. Ein Reicha Nodif. Then its smell does not expand or permeate the area. So now, what's the nimshal? What are we speaking about here? So as a Rashi explains to us over here, that when a person teaches Torah to others, then his shame is spread out, his Torah is spread out, and that his fragrance or his effervescence spreads because he has many talmidim that are taking his Torah and people hear about his Torah. So that's the idea here, that the Talmud Chacham should, if he has Torah, if he has what to share, that he should teach and should make sure to spread out his Torah. Things that are normally covered from him are then revealed to him. So here there's a machlokus between Rashi and Tosfos, what that means. So Rashi says over here that means that things that were otherwise hidden from him and things that he had difficulty understanding, they will come easily to him because he's teaching his students, will come about. Thus it says, Perish b'nei adam megalim lo rezehem, that people tell him their secrets, l'fishin ne'anim imenu, etza v'tushya, because they learn Torah from him and they enjoy his advice, they're going to reveal things to him or they're going to tell him other things. So thus it says is that people will come to reveal things to him. On the other hand, Rashi seems to indicate it's still talking about the Torah, that other things that were otherwise hard to him or difficult for him will now be revealed when he's teaching the students that will come to him. Yavai siyata dishmaya. Shenemar, how do we know that's true? Because it says, right, alemot, okein alemot evucha, karibay alumot. Don't call it alemot, but rather alumot, those are what were hidden from you. Vod, shemachamavet ovo, that the machamavet loves him. Shenemar, again, alemot evucha, karibay almavet, or almot, the one who brings death, Ayvucha will love him. He's successful. He was able to get olam hazeh and olam haba. She'echad olam hazeh v'echad olam haba. She'emar elimut karibay olamot. That you get two worlds from this when he teaches Torah, when he allows his Torah to be spread out. Now the Gemara continues. Ve'elu durim sh'ovdei chaveim isuran. Asurim v'eni isuran isuran ha. These are asurim, but they're only asur b'achila, not asur b'ana. Chalav she'chalbo uvei kuchavim. So this is milk that was milked by a non-Jew, stuff which is chalav akum. V'eni Yisrael roei, and there's no Jew watching it. There's a Jew watching it, then it becomes chalav Yisrael, it's okay. Now, the problem here is obviously because we're afraid that he's going to bring from, we'll see in the Gemara, non-kosher milk and mix it in. V'pat v'shemen shelahem, that the pat and shemen, which are there, also goes thereby. Pat and shemen are asurim be'achila, not asurim be'hana'ah. And we're going to see in the Gemara what was the reasoning that they were oser pat and shemen, because of mishum yeinam. We saw that before, that they asked pat and shemen because it might lead to yeinam. So now Rebbe ubeit dino heitiru shemen. Rebbe and his Beit Din were Matir Shemen. Now, Rebbe is wrong over here. It should really be Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that's mentioned in the Mishnah, not the Rabbi. And it's actually the grandson of Rabbi, of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the Tano, who's known as Rebbe. It's his grandson, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, that is the one who was Matir over here. He is an Amora. And in the Gemara, they'll call him Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah. Tosus later on, we'll see in the Gemara, I'll point it out there. Tosus points out that this Rabbi Yehuda over here should really be Rabbi Yehuda. They made it, was Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah, and it was entered to the Mishnah later on. Once his grandson was Matir Shemen, they redacted the Mishnah to add in his piece, even though he's an Amora, and they called him Yehuda Nasi to make it sound like he was a Tana, that it fit into the Mishnah. That's Rabbi Yehuda Nasiah, but they're calling him Rabbi Yehuda Nasi in the Mishnah. So they Hetiru Shemen, they were Matir Shemen. Veshlakot, things that are cooked by an Oved Kuchavim, anything that's cooked, you should not share with them. And it's also a problem on Mishum Chatnut. We don't want social activity between you. Vikvashin, also things that are pickled between them, which is the equivalent of cooking, things that have long duration are eaten at meals. Vishitarkam latechan atochan yayin. Over here, the kvashim, the problem is that they use wine, vichometz, in order to cause the pickling of the item. So that's the problem there. And shlakot also, either they add them in, or the possibility with shlakot, the problem is that it's a problem of kodar shibishlo vichavim, afilu beklitaor, kolo mishum chatnut. As Rashi says here, it's a problem of chatnut, or the other possibility is that they add the wine and the chometz, if that's modifying just kvashim, or is it also modifying shlakot. Now, the tarit trufa is a type of fish, the tarit, which is a kosher fish, that fish, if it's trufa, if it's already chopped up and mixed up, then it's problematic. If it's whole, then it's not a problem. When it's whole, then you can see the fish, and it's a unique type of fish that's kosher, and you don't have to worry about it. But zir, shein ba daga kalbit. Now, any brine, fresh brine, that doesn't have a kalbit floating around in it or swimming around it, shotetet bo. Why is that? So Rashi explains to us that min dagim tanim, that these are little fish, this kalbit, grows spontaneously, kilbit ligadel me'aleh bitzir shel dagim torim, but it only survives, only grows spontaneously inside of kosher fish brine. But if there's any non-kosher fish brine over there, it will not exist. So if you have this fish that floats around, wherever this item is that floats around this fish brine, if this kilbit exists, then we know that it's kosher fish brine. If there's no kilbit in it, then we know there's non-kosher brine in there, and you cannot drink it. But chilik, and the chilik now, Rashi says, is a very small type of fish that does not have snapir and kaskesa, does not have fins and scales when it's young, but grows them later on in life. And therefore it's kosher. Now they mixed it up. In this case, over here, when they have a chilek mixed up, here it's a whole fish. Even when it's not trufa, even then when it's not chopped up, it's problematic because there are other fish that look very similar to the chilek, and therefore we don't know if it's chilek or it's a non-kosher fish. And because of that mix-up, you'll never know if there's non-kosher fish in there, so you can't eat the chilek at all. Bekoret shel chiltit. And the last thing is this, koret shel chiltit, which you're not allowed to eat. And Rashi says that these are a type of fruit, min perihu, shekom lizra, and they cut it with a knife that has shamnunit on it, and the problem when they cut it with this knife is that they have this non-kosher shamnunit that gets into the fruit, never you can't have it. Umelech shalgondit, and this salt of shalgondit, which the Gemara will discuss what the problem is, reelu asurim, ben isurani surhana, all these are asur ba'achila, but not asurim behana'a. Where it says, chalav d'maynachushla, what's the problem of chalavakum? So imishume chlufe, if it's a problem, it's going to exchange the kosher milk for the non-kosher milk. Tahor chiyur, tamei yarok. Kosher milk is white, and tamei milk is yarok. I wouldn't say green, but it probably has a yellow tint to it. That's what the Gemara uses yarok for. Imishume ruve. So he says, okay, what are we really marks about? We're worried about him mixing the kosher milk with the non-kosher milk, and then you won't be able to tell. So nikum, curdle the milk and find out if it turns into cheese. When it comes to milk, only kosher milk ends up or results in a curdled cheese. But non-kosher milk cannot curdle into cheese. So that'll be the ultimate determinant. You just curdle it, and we'll figure out whether it's kosher or non-kosher. So Gemara says, either kaboy the gvina hachanami. You're right. If he needs cheese, that would be right. You'd be absolutely right. Problem is, he needs to eat it. He doesn't need it for his cheese. He wants to actually consume the milk the way it is. So take a sample from it, and then try to curdle that part of it. Oh, because even by Torah cheese, there's some of it that remains liquidy. We can't tell whether it's what's left over is the non-kosher milk, or it's just the liquid that's naturally left over when you curdle kosher milk. Even if he needs it for cheese, then in the holes of the cheese, or the cracks of the cheese, even if he makes it fully into cheese, there's always liquid that's left over. Even in kosher cheese or kosher milk that is used, there's some liquid that's left over. If that liquid is left over, now you have a problem, because that liquid could either be from the kosher milk that's naturally left over, or it could be from the non-kosher milk, which did not curdle, so we cannot make a determination whether you have kosher milk or non-kosher milk that is mixed together over here. One said, and then a veterinarian who used to spend Shabbos by us when he was in school, and he mentioned to me that he thought that the problem of non-kosher milk here in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel was not because of pigs necessarily, because they were not common or frequent around this area at that time. They were in Mitzrayim, but in Eretz Yisrael they were not so common, and he felt that the mixture, what they were worried about here was the chalav of a gamal, which is camel's milk, and that's actually what they were worried about here, the mixing up of the camel's milk with the kosher milk that was available. Right now, the Gemara contains rapat. Pot over here sounds like from our Mishnah that it was not Hutra Bebezin. Sounds from this statement of Rav Kahano that it was not Hutra Bebezin, that there is someone who thinks it's Mutar. In, we do have a case. Rabbi went out into the field. He brought in a pot purni, from probably the word furnace, from a large oven, a large furnace, that had was cooked the size of a sa'ah worth. Rabbi, come on now, pot zu. This is such beautiful bread. Why did the chachamim moser it? So, what do you mean? Why did the chachamim do it? They weren't chadnu. They were worried about intermarriage. They were worried about the social closest that would be brought from sharing those meals, breaking bread together. What was the reason the Chachamim were oser it in the fields? in that we should distinguish or differentiate between in the city and out in the fields. In the city, there's a problem of maybe kviut, and the social interaction will be on a continuous basis, and therefore we worry about chadnut. But it's a aray, it happens once in a blue moon when one's traveling right on the sadeh, that it should be okay. People thought that Rebbe was just saying that it's mutar legamri. Rebbe lo itir apat. He didn't lose matir, and if he was matir, he was only matir in the sadeh, which we'll see later on. That wasn't the case. He saw that they were learning and they barely had any bread. They couldn't eat. There was nothing to eat. There's no baker in town? He was asking, there's no non-kosher baker in town? He was referencing to a Jewish baker. He wasn't saying, oh, there's no non-Jewish baker. So now, even the one who thinks that Rabbi says that Plater of Rechim is Mutar, Bo Amran Elo Deleka Plater Yisrael. That's only when there's no Jewish baker around. If there's a Jewish baker around, you've got to take from the Jewish baker. If there is no Jewish baker, then you can rely on Pat Akum, then you can rely on a non-Jewish baker. Aval Malkum Dika Plater Yisrael, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, according to Rabbi, I feel the man Amar that Rabbi was Matir, Plater of Rechim, Ani Mila B'Sodeh. It's only out in the field of Veir, Lo, in the city, No Mishum Chadlo, because of the social interaction that would be caused by that. Aiba was taking pat akum and he was eating it out in the fields, in the borders of the fields. So I'm the Rabbah, Itaimar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Lo Tishto. Over here with the girsa, what it is, either Lo Tishto Minei. Right, don't learn anything from him. Because he eats non-kosher. He eats non-kosher bread, meaning he eats patakum. That's what if you look in the Bach, he says, "Perish lo tumud rashma mishmo." Don't say anything over in his name, because he eats patakum. The way the Rabbeinu Chananel has the gear says, though, tishtayilei, don't speak with him. Because he eats patakum, he's not a chaver anymore. He's eating patakum, and it's a problem. So you shouldn't interact. You shouldn't either interact or quote something in his name, because he's not makpid on patakum. Over here, Tosus asks the question. He says, "Mid the kamar pat bohutra bebeitin." Says the fact that our Gemara says that pat was not hutra bebeitin sounds like it was allowed to be hutra bebeitin. If they had found a beitin or the beitin was matur, then it would have been fine. The indications from that are that it must have been that it was lo pashat berov Yisrael, that the gzera did not take hold on rov klal Yisrael. We're going to see in the upcoming dapim that the reason that they said it wasn't a problem or they were matir on the shemen is because it's lo pashat beklal Yisrael. Was not widely accepted in klal Yisrael. So it must be the same thing here by pat. It was not widely accepted in klal Yisrael. That's the only reason you could have a beit din accepted. So he says, well, if it was not widely accepted at the time they made the gzera, plus rov b'nei Yisrael enum yichon lamod ba, he says, there, for that reason, pat akum should not apply today. That's what Tosu says, number one. Number two, he says, maybe even, it's true that Rebbe's Beis Din was not Matir, Rebbe Yehuda Nasiya's Beis Din was Matir Shem, wasn't Matir Pat, even though they wanted to. We'll see that in the upcoming Dab, and they wanted to do it, but they didn't want to be called the Beis Din that was Matir everything. So they left Pat in place. But the indications from that it could have been that they could have been matirit, and a beis din after them did come in matir, and he brings a proof from the Yerushalmi that they were matir. That later on there was a beis din that stood up and was matir padakum. So Tosu says, even if you don't say they were matir, I think there's room to be mekil and padakum. Number two is if you say that we follow Yerushalmi, then there even was a beis din that was matirit, and they did matir padakum. And the last thing he says that even someone who's makbid on padakum and someone who's not, they can eat together because padakum, even if it's it's an Isser Gavra, not an Isser Chepza. There's no Chepza of Isser when it comes to Padakum. And therefore, there's no Tarovet. He quotes the Gemara from Chulin. It says there's no Tarovet by Padakum. That'll make a big difference between Bishul Akum and Padakum. When it comes to Bishul Akum, the Chepza itself is Asur, and therefore there's problems of Tarovet, problems in the Chepza of Isser. When it comes to Padakum, Padakum is only an Isser in the Gavra. So even if the Padakum is mixed in other things, and there it's not a Chepza of Isser, it's only a problem on the Gavra, and therefore there won't even be a problem of Tarovet, and so on and so forth. Other items that get mixed in with this patakum, and that maybe can explain why today we're not so makpid on patakum. And Eretz Yisrael is really not a difficulty; it's almost all pat Yisrael. It's hard to find patakum, but in Chutz La'aretz where they are makel on patakum for a number of reasons. Might be one is this idea that it's only Yisrael and the Gavra, not Yisrael and the Chepza. So that's one reason. It's not a strong gzera. Tosus here lays out two reasons to be matter. One is that it was either nitar yidei beis din, or even if it wasn't nitar yidei beis din, you have the tziruf of that the Isra was not pushed b'chol klai, so plus in ro b'tzibur yicholim lamod bo. And you have the last idea, which is that the whole concept was mishum chatnun, because of the socialization, the chatnun issue. That might apply when you're dealing with a smaller group of people. You're dealing with a baker, a local baker, or a local person that's cooking bread. But when you're dealing with bread that's made on a wholesale basis, that's made with large factories, over there, if he goes to mishum chatnun, maybe over there, there's not a reason to say mishum chatnun. So for all those reasons, there might be room to be mekil today by patakum. But nevertheless, we know that all the mefarshim, all the rishonim, and all the poskim bring down with regards to ben as kesel asur between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. Even those people that eat pat akum all year round should be makpid ben and seretz mechuba to eat pat Yisrael only. And that's one of the chumrot that's brought down that people should be makpid on between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim. Okay, we'll stop over here.